Game Bros. Hello, listeners.
Ooh.
It's a spooky episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
And we're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our spooky podcast where we talk about spooky board games. It's October.
Yeah, you know what that means.
You know what that means. Every podcast does spooky themed episodes.
Everything does spooky themed everything.
And our podcast is no different. So this week, it's a regularly scheduled weekly episode where we're going to pick one board game and we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about how to play it. We're going to talk about some strategies in the game, and we're going to talk about the design of the game. And today we have picked kind of a spooky game. I guess it's not really a traditional Halloween theme, but it is a pretty spooky theme. Matthew, what are we talking about today?
It is Mr. Jack, designed by Bruno Cathala and Ludovic Maublanc, and published by Huracan in 2006.
Which Jack are we talking about here?
Jack the Ripper.
Ooh,
that Jack. Chills.
That Jack. All right. So for a short description.
Yeah.
What did you just say?
I was going to say, why don't you give some backstory?
Okay, yeah. There was a guy in London, I guess, who killed people named Jack the Ripper. Is that the backstory you want?
I meant more like the description of the game.
All right, so for a short description of Mr. Jack. In the two-player game Mr. Jack, one player is an investigator trying to apprehend Jack the Ripper, and the other is Jack, a criminal secretly hiding amongst the citizens who is attempting to escape London. Over the course of 8 rounds, players take turns moving the 8 citizens on the board using their abilities to help identify Jack or to help conceal the identity of Jack and help Jack escape. At the end of each round, Jack must reveal whether they are witnessed, meaning they can be seen by civilians, or not witnessed. The investigator uses this knowledge to narrow down Jack's identity. The game ends when either A, the investigator uses another citizen to apprehend who they believe Jack is, the citizen they believe Jack to be, B, Jack escapes after a round where they are not witnessed, or C, the 8 rounds are up. In the first case, the investigator wins if they are correct in apprehending Jack. In the case that they're wrong, or every other case, Jack wins. So there are 8 people on a board. One of them is Jack, and only the player playing Jack knows who that is. Players take turns controlling each of the citizens in different ways, moving them around. And the investigator is trying to find and arrest Jack, and Jack is trying to escape and keep his identity hidden.
Right.
So let's go a little bit more in detail on how to play the game, and then let's talk about strategies.
Sure. Let's start with the makeup of the board. So, okay. There's like this hex grid map of London, and, there's a few key features. For one thing, there are 4 exits from the map on the corners of the board.
I just counted it. It's 13 hexes across.
Yeah. And how many hexes down?
9.
Nice.
But it's a kind of a amorphous shape. It's not like a perfect rectangle.
Yeah, and there's like, you know, there's alleyways and kind of main streets. It's mm-hmm. It kind of webs together.
Yeah, there's a couple buildings and gardens that serve as obstacles on the board.
Yeah.
And divide it into a bunch of different like roads and alleys.
Right. So there are 4 exits on each of the corners of the board. And mm-hmm. 2 of these exits start with a police barricade in front of them. If Jack wants to escape through an exit, he has to do so while unwitnessed from the previous turn. Mm-hmm. And Jack cannot escape through an exit that has a barricade. Now, there are, of course, the streets, but there are also, in between the streets, some gas lamps. And at the start of the game, 6 of these are lit. And when a gas lamp is lit, any characters that are around the gas lamp are seen. They are witnessed. And that means that if Jack is among the ones that are next to the gas lamp in this case, then Jack would be witnessed and all other characters would be witnessed as well, because when Jack reveals whether they are witnessed or unwitnessed, the investigator flips over all the character tokens that are not in that same grouping as Jack to help narrow down who is Jack and who's not.
Mm-hmm. I want to mention that the gas lamps are obstacles, so that you cannot stand on the same space as a gas lamp. And when they are lit, they have a lit token on them. It's a yellow token that covers the hex. As the game progresses, some of these tokens will be removed, And one of the characters, when we get to the characters, can also move them to other parts of the board. There are some gas lamps on the board that are not lit and don't have a lit token at the start of the game, but they can be lit later.
Right. Specifically, after the first four rounds, gas lamps numbered 1 through 4 will be unlit and removed from the board.
Yes.
And eventually there will only be 2 lit gas lamps on the board at any given time.
Mm-hmm. Another feature on the board are the manholes.
Oh, right.
So there are, there's a handful of manholes. I think there's something like 8 of them about. And, four of those manholes are relatively close to an exit. One manhole is on the same space that you exit from on the edge of the board in one of the corners. Another corner, I think the corner opposite it, the manhole is 2 spaces away. Another corner has a manhole 3 spaces away. And then another corner has a manhole 4 spaces away. And then there's a handful of manholes scattered in the center of the board as well.
Right.
All of the manholes are adjacent to one another for the purposes of walking or movement. So when a player is moving a character around, they can spend a point of movement to move them from one manhole to another.
Right.
This serves for Jack as an especially useful purpose if you can manage to get a manhole uncovered near one of the exits. And right. They just hop through it and leave.
The 2 manholes that are closest to their exits, the one space away and 1 2 space away, start the game with manhole covers on them. Mm-hmm. And these mean that those manholes are unable to be moved into or out from. And that's another character that can interact with those.
Yes.
That's the main part of the board. Those are the features.
At the start of the game, all 8 citizens have predetermined spaces where they are placed. 4 of those citizens are near gas lamps at the center of the board. And 4 of the citizens are scattered around the edges of the board, but not near an exit, per se. Right. And what that means is that at the beginning of the game, 4 of the citizens are witnessed, and 4 of them are not witnessed.
Right. And... let's go ahead and go into what the characters all do.
Oh, but real quick, there's one other way to be witnessed other than standing near gas lamp, and that's to be standing directly next to another player or another character on the board. as we get into strategy, that'll become important, but just know that at the end of every round, Jack says whether or not they are witnessed, and that means that they are either standing next to another character or they're standing directly next to a lit gas lamp.
Right. Okay.
All right.
So, characters. There are 8 characters in the game, as we said, and each character has a unique ability. Most of them can move up to 3 spaces, between 1 and 3 spaces, during their turn. And when you take a character's turn, you have to move and you have to do its ability, except for, I think, one character has an ability you don't have to do, or movement you don't have to do.
I believe there's 2 characters that do that.
Right, okay.
That have the option, but most of them are mandatory.
Right. Most of them can move 1 to 3 spaces, like I said, and each of them have a different ability that is useful in some different way. So let's start with, let's start with the basic one, Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
So at the start of the game, the player playing Jack gets an alibi card to show who they are, and they keep it hidden. The rest of the alibi cards are kept in a deck to the side of the board. And after Sherlock Holmes moves, that player draws an alibi card. This means that the detective player can see a character who is innocent by doing so, or the Jack player can keep the other player from knowing who all is innocent a little easier.
Right, if the other player were to also use the Sherlock Holmes card in the future, or the Sherlock Holmes character in the future, that would be one more person that they could not have the chance of drawing.
Yeah. Next up would be, I guess, Dr. Watson, to keep with the theming. So Dr. Watson has a lantern that points towards one edge of the tile he's on, and after moving him, all spaces in a straight line from that lantern until it hits an obstacle are considered lit. So he can light up a row of street tiles that, you know, any characters could be a part of.
Yeah. So that's one way of getting a lot of people to be witnessed.
Right.
When you move him, you get to choose the orientation. There's an arrow on his little player token that shows the players which direction he's facing, and the person that moves him gets to choose that direction. Exactly.
Yeah. Let's see. Next up, let's go ahead and go to Inspector Lestrade, who, after he moves, can move any of the police barricades into one of the other unblocked exits.
Mm-hmm.
There is Bert, who can move manhole covers. So he's good at opening up places to move around or blocking off those locations. There is John Smith, who after moving can move one of the lit gas lamp tokens to an unlit gas lamp space. So he shuts off one and lights another. There is Sergeant Goodley, who can move other characters closer to him, but it takes part of his movement. And I believe that in order to do this, you still have to move Sergeant Goodley at least one space, because mm-hmm. characters can't end the turn on the space they started.
Right, so that's a movement rule for every character.
Yeah, so you have like 2 points of movement you can use on other characters as long as they're moving closer to Sergeant Goodley, which just means that they're ending on a space that's closer to him than they started. So if there's like a branching path, you know, you can math it out fairly easily.
Yeah.
Let's see, there is Miss Stealthy, who is the only character that can move 4 spaces, but she can also move through obstacles as long as she does not end her turn there. So she can go through houses and gardens and gas lamps.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, there is, I think the last one then is William Gull, G-U-L-L. And instead of moving, he can swap places with any other character. So he starts, you know, in one end of the board, and then he can just swap anyone to that end of the board, kind of in the middle. Mm-hmm. And I think that's all the characters.
Yep.
And so at the start of each round, 4 characters are revealed of the 8, and players take turns taking the first card, and then whoever didn't take the first card takes 2 after that. And then the other player takes the last one. So on the first round of the game, it goes the detective picks 1, Jack picks 2, detective picks the last one. And then the next round, it's Jack picks 1, the detective picks 2, Jack picks 1, and back and forth.
Right. And when you pick a character, you must immediately move them and use their ability if it's mandatory.
Yeah.
So yep. That means that the inspector picks a character, moves them, uses their ability, then Jack will pick 1 character, move them, use their ability, then pick another character, move them, use their ability, then back to the inspector. That's on the first right. turn. And it alternates, so on the second turn and every other even turn, Jack will pick first, then the inspector will pick second and third, and then Jack will pick fourth.
Right. It's also important to note that for the inspector to accuse Jack, they have to move any character onto the space that Jack is, or the character they want to accuse.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, Jack cannot end a character's space on another character's space. So only the inspector can land a character where another one is and end the turn there, and only if they accuse. Otherwise, right. you have to pass through them and land somewhere else.
I think the last point of important information in this game is that after the first 4 characters are drawn for the first turn and the inspector and Jack take their turns picking them and moving them, for the next turn, the remaining 4 characters are picked. So by the end of the second turn, all 8 characters have moved and used their abilities. And then starting on the third turn, you shuffle those characters and draw 4, and then you draw the remaining 4. So essentially every 2 turns you have used all of the characters, and then at the end of that even numbered turn you are shuffling them to start that process over.
Right.
So that means that on an odd number turn where the inspector goes first, you can always predict exactly who will be in the next turn, which characters will be available.
Yep.
All right. So I think with that we can start getting into strategy.
Yes.
Strategy. So I think this is kind of a gateway game of sorts for a couple different concepts. So I kind of want to approach the strategy portion of this from a little more of a gateway, like beginner perspective.
Sure.
So like deduction in this game is kind of basic on the part of the inspector. There's a couple like tricks that we came up with while we were playing. But the easiest way to figure out who Jack is just to constantly divide the number of suspects you have in half.
Right. If you think about it, Jack wants to be in a position where the majority of characters are in the same state as Jack, either seen or unseen. And to minimize that, the inspector wants it to be as close to 50-50 as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you can narrow it down from 8 to 4, then to 2, then to, you know, 1 from there. Theoretically. And even when you have it at 2, you have a pretty good shot. And so, yeah, it's a good sort of thing for the inspector to try to divide as best as possible.
Right. So if you're the inspector, that's what you're paying attention to for like the first 3 turns of the game. It's not really about like keeping Jack visible, just so that he can't escape. It's more just about because if you do that, the gas lamps will go away, you know, after so many turns, and then it'll be just all too easy for most of the characters to be invisible, not visible.
Yeah.
So so your goal is to split in half and not really care, especially because I think on the first 2 turns, it's probably nearly impossible for Jack to escape. Unless he gets to both move a police barricade and move a manhole cover.
Or unless Jack is Miss Stealthy.
Yeah.
Miss Stealthy can escape on turn 2. Because Jack starts the game scene, so you can't escape turn 1.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Isn't Miss Stealthy actually one of the people that is unseen at the start of the game? She's up like a manhole cover?
No, I mean the card that shows whether Jack was seen or unseen the previous turn, which is what you check to see if you can escape, starts scene.
On the scene.
So you literally cannot escape on the first round.
Sure.
Right. But either way, it's harder for Jack to escape super early without making it obvious.
Yes.
Right.
It'll probably take at least 2 turns to get something into position.
Right.
And if you're, you know, paying attention to what they're moving, like what obstacles they're moving around to set up an escape, you know, you can see it. If they're just going for it, it's pretty obvious.
Right. Yeah.
So usually Jack won't just go for it, in which case it's better to take the time and just whittle things down by half every turn until you get down to 1 or 2 characters.
Exactly.
So there's one tip that you came up with in the first time we played, which was if there are multiple witness or multiple suspects that could be Jack, if one of them could escape and Jack chooses not to have them escape, then they're not Jack.
Right. This is kind of a gambit, because if they do escape, then you lose as the detective.
Mm-hmm.
But if it just so happens to reach that point and you didn't do anything to stop it and they don't try to escape anyways, then, you know, they're not Jack.
Right. So it's not like you should always be making sure that nobody can just escape or no suspect can escape. But sometimes, you know, that opportunity might actually just come up by accident, and it can be very telling if they don't escape.
Right. Yeah. As far as like that information management goes, once like the lights start to die out, the detective might want to try to keep characters about 3 spaces away from exits so that it's harder for Jack to end the turn and then be able to escape the next turn through those exits, just because there'll be like a watchman standing there that will see Jack. However, also, Jack might want to, like, try to move things to make it look like Jack's wanting to go through one exit, but then keep the other exit open. So the obvious thing is the detective will pay a lot of attention to where the 2 manholes that are closest to the exits are. But as Jack, if you have like a character that's four spaces away from one of the other exits, you can try to use Bert or Lestrade to like create a diversion over in the corner and try to move something there with one of your characters to make it look like you're escaping, and then move the other one away. You know, right. Be threatening.
Yeah, fainting and escape is a pretty powerful thing.
Right, because the detective has to spend a lot of resources just to stop it, whereas mm-hmm. you get a little bit of wiggle room.
Right.
I have some individual character strategies that are, like, good tips for using specific characters.
Okay.
We want to go through those?
Sure.
So, Goodly is very strong because Goodly can manipulate information really well. Because Goodly can move up to two other characters, meaning you could break up pairs that are seeing each other. You can gather people together to see each other. You can move characters away from, like, lamps, or move characters closer to manholes. You know, both players generally want to use Goodly to manipulate the seen and unseen ratio. But
because usually one space is enough to
right.
change that factor about a character.
Right. But Jack can use Goodly to move Jack indirectly on one of the turns where the character who is Jack isn't one of the available characters,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of interesting.
That is. Although it should be said that, like you said, you can split that up and you wouldn't want to waste both movements on the real Jack,
right?
Because that would probably give it away.
Yeah.
If your goal is just to, I mean, if you need to move it two spaces to get to an exit, and you know that next turn you're going first, and there's nothing that the inspector can do to see the real Jack or apprehend the real Jack, then go for it. But exactly. if you still need to conceal that fact, then definitely split it up, because you're probably just trying to get Jack, the real Jack, to be unseen for the next turn.
Right. Yeah, Goodly is like an extra burst of speed for those odd-numbered turns when Jack mm-hmm. knows that Goodly is going to be on the even-numbered turn, or when Jack knows that their character is going to be in the even-numbered turn next.
Right.
We touched on Sherlock. Sherlock is just super important information-wise. Like, both players have good reason to use him. One important thing is if Jack gets an alibi card, Jack can create like a decoy. So like Jack has more reason to make whoever's on the alibi they just drew still look like a suspect, and make it. And it's easier to like feint those escapes with those decoy characters that way, because you know the opponent can't draw their alibi card. Because like there were a few games where the detective got like really important information just because they drew an alibi of one of the remaining suspects when there was only yes. like three or two, and so like that's reason enough that Jack would want to minimize as many alibis as possible that the detective can get.
Personally, I think the biggest reason to get Sherlock Holmes as Jack is because Sherlock Holmes is very powerful for the inspector. I think he's more right. powerful. Like, as good as Sherlock Holmes is for Jack, he's even better for the inspector.
Right.
For two reasons. The first reason is that it's just, you know, usually a great piece of information to eliminate another character of the eight characters that could be Jack. Early on in the game, like in the first two turns, it's huge because, you know, that's the difference between having four suspects and three suspects by the end of the second turn.
Right. It's sometimes. The only way for the detective to get a majority in their favor early game, like, you know, consistently.
So the other reason why it's good is because Jack doesn't know who you know isn't Jack.
Right.
And so what that means is that Jack might end up using the person whose alibi you drew as a decoy. And they might be trying to keep them, you know, under the same statuses as the real Jack, meaning like if the real Jack is witnessed, then they'll keep this decoy witnessed as well. And you can just kind of let them do that as the investigator and just sit there knowing that, like, you know, the truth that that's not really Jack. That Jack is trying to you know,
fool you
using this decoy. So that means like, yeah, I mean, it means it whittled it down for you, but also it's a way that you can kind of turn the deception on Jack.
Right. If you have to choose, so this is the next one. It's like my only point for Miss Stealthy, which is if you're the detective and you have to choose whether you want to light up Goal or Miss Stealthy, because they're like on opposite ends of the board, in like, you know, in symmetric positions.
Mm-hmm.
Choose Miss Stealthy just because, like I said, she is possible to escape on turn two, which it's you know, a 1 in 8 chance that Jack has her. So
yeah,
like
he has to both have her and also move the manhole cover and the police barricade. Oh wait, no. She can escape because she starts next to a manhole cover, right?
Miss Stealthy is 4 spaces away from an exit, but 2 of those are obstacles.
Okay.
But you can move through the 2 obstacles, and then the third space is safe, and then the 4th space is the exit.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, like, if you have to light up a character round 1, try to make it Miss Stealthy. Goal is really neat, because Goal can single out characters, which is really good for breaking up, like, these tight formations where Jack has always 2 or 3 characters in the same state, because if you know Goal is innocent, then you can swap him out with a seen character to make that character unseen, and then you know whether or not that character is like, you have a better control of learning whether or not that character is Jack or right. not,
because Goal for his movement can instead swap places with another character on the board. You just keep Goal in shadow.
Right, this is sort of the advantage to not lighting up Goal and lighting up Miss Stealthy, is that you can then use Goal as like this offensive put somebody in hiding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Watson, I think one of Watson's best things is that he can cover escapes really easily late game. Because, like mm-hmm. I said, since Jack has to be seen on the unseen on the previous turn to escape, you can have Watson like light up this long stretch of land that like kind of covers or kind of like puts a boundary in front of the exit. So like the mm-hmm. exit where the manhole cover is 2 spaces away, that is the corner where Watson starts. And if he's facing this long stretch that goes down to the manhole where Miss Stealthy is, that covers a huge portion of the board, including a manhole. So like if you can shine a light on a manhole and a few more spaces out from the exit, then you have a good chance of just like blocking off that space alone.
Right.
Otherwise, though, it is kind of hard to use Watson, it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to use him as Jack. It seems like he's pretty statted for being good for investigators.
He's really all about just like visibility management, mm-hmm. vision management, stuff like that.
Yeah, I guess it's Jack, you can use Watson to pour some visibility on a couple characters so that you are witnessed.
Come on, sorry, light me up.
Okay.
All right.
yeah. John doesn't Smith happen all the time, I promise.
John Smith is pretty good at lighting up.
I just want to say that like if you light somebody up with Watson, that's a good way at least of deceiving somebody and making like somebody look like they're guilty.
Yeah,
just by saying like, oh, I don't want only these few characters to be not witnessed, and then say that Jack is not witnessed, so I'm gonna pour some light on them.
Yeah.
But then that says like, oh, that's totally Jack, right? So just do that on people who aren't Jack.
Yeah. Where is it? Yeah, so John Smith is another character that can block off exits indirectly by shining light on them.
Mm-hmm.
Because the 4 lampposts that go out are the ones near the exits, but the ones in the middle are a little less important, other than like the fact that you might want to block manholes with light. But mm-hmm. for the most part, if Jack is gathering towards the corners, then it's fair game to go ahead and like use John Smith to defensively put light posts down. And as Jack, you can move light posts towards the center in like one half of either the top or the bottom of the center sort of row, so that you can use the manholes a little safer, as well as cluster around an exit.
Mm-hmm.
Because once there's only two light posts, it can get pretty tricky to decide where you want them. And if you put them both just like in the very top half of the middle, then most of the board gets completely uncovered, including like six manholes. Lestrade is one of the like floodgate characters that literally just prevents you from exiting.
Who is the guy that does manholes?
That's Bert.
I would group Bert and Lestrade like pretty much under the same strategic category.
These are
they basically do the same.
Yeah, these are both like, you know, you need both of them to make a clean getaway from the middle of the board without having to like group up towards an exit. They're good at surprising in terms of like letting any character move through, but you do have to move two things out of the way to get an exit.
The way that the board is set up, there are two blocks to exiting through the most convenient pathway as Jack. And that is that both of those convenient corners, the ones that have manholes closest to them, are covered by manhole covers and have police barricades. So as Jack, you would need to get both of them to make the clean escape route.
Right. And both of these have a similar thing where you can use them to make diversions still, like we mentioned. Because if it's like an even round and you pick Bert and you move a manhole out of the way, or a Lestrade and you move a barricade out of the way of an exit that you're not close to, and then block another exit you're not close to, then it's still, but like as long as you're moving it away from one of those like quick exits, it's in the detective's best interest to then take that character as soon as possible and reset it, which kind of gives you a free move over them.
Mm-hmm.
Where they just have to undo what you did.
I personally enjoy moving Jack near a barricaded exit and then removing that exit before escaping.
Right, yeah.
That's another fun play to do.
Right. That's actually a little better to do on, like, moving Jack towards the exit on the even turn. Just because that way you can play Lestrade and move Jack on the same odd turn, but that might just be me.
So if you're the inspector, is there a way in the first two turns to avoid a clean getaway to be set up?
To avoid because, a clean getaway to be set like, up?
Think about it this way. So so the way it works is that Jack wants both of those characters to do the thing that he wants them to do, which is to move the obstacle from the same corner, right?
Right.
So on the first turn, you draw four characters. So you can either draw one of them or both of them or none of them.
Right.
And I think the only situation where the inspector gets what they want and Jack doesn't get what they want is if both of them are drawn in the second hand.
Really?
Yeah. If one of them or both of them are in the first hand, if the detective takes one of them for his first choice and moves either a manhole cover and a police cover, then either Jack will get the first selection next round and move the, you know, whichever obstacle still remains in the corner that the detective removed it from. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because they both start, there's two in each of the good corners. So the, and it's mandatory that they move. So if the inspector picks, you know, say Lestrade and moves a barricade from one of the corners, then Jack just needs to pick Bert and move the manhole cover from the same corner. If they are both in the first hand, then, you know, so whichever the inspector picks, Jack picks the other and moves it from the same corner. If the inspector doesn't pick one, then Jack would just pick both and move them both from the same corner.
Mm-hmm.
If there's only one and Jack picked it, Jack gets the first choice next round, so they get to move it from the same corner. So the only case that the inspector gets to switch that up is if they're both in the second hand, so that Jack would get the first pick,
right,
maybe though, move one from one corner, and then the inspector would get to move from the other corner.
Though that still doesn't take into account lighting and vision, you know?
Sure, so, but that's just the escape route. And the escape route means you have an open manhole and an open exit, And so the escape route isn't going to be stand in that corner and then leave. It's going to be stand near a manhole and then leave.
Right. But it's easier. And it's
very easy to stand near a manhole in darkness. There's tons of manholes.
Sure, yeah. But I think it's also that, like, not only does the character have to be unseen and near a manhole, but, you know, you have to not be obvious about it, and you have to give up a lot of information because, like, it's easier to light people than it is to hide people early game. So, like, there'll only be, like, two suspects after the first round then, if that scenario happens and Jack tries to make a clean getaway. So, like, so much information is lost from Jack that the inspector gains. Oh, I did want to say one more thing, which is that as Jack, you might want to use Bert late game to block Miss Stealthy from reaching you. Because since Miss Stealthy can move four spaces, she can move into a manhole space, into the other manhole space, and then two more spaces, which means that she can reach most places that Jack would be from anywhere on the board almost and accuse you. So, like, late game, she becomes one of the best tools that the inspector has to just snipe Jack before Jack exits, as far as, like, straight accusation. So, like, that's something you can try to use Bert for, is to block her.
Mm-hmm.
In a way.
The last piece of strategy that I have is just to be very aware of who can move where.
Yeah.
As either character. This is kind of like we talked about in, what was it, Santorini? Where each character has, like, an area of influence. And in this game, Jack wants to be aware of that so they can stay out of the area of influence of other characters and be in shadow for a turn and also set up to exit the map the next turn. And the investigator wants everyone to be within each other's areas of influence so that any given character can move onto any other given character and make that arrest.
Right.
Or just move next to any other given character and make them visible so that they can't escape next turn.
Right. All right. You want to move on to the design portion?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So yeah. The first thing I want to say about this game that's very cool is that this is a symmetrical game with asymmetric goals.
Yeah.
And then the second thing that I want to talk about later is that this game uses a mechanic that I don't see often in games. It's most prevalent in deck building games, but that is ethical card counting. So on the first part, it's very cool that this is a symmetrical game and that all of the pieces behave exactly the same for both players, but there are asymmetric goals to this game.
Right. Their implications are different for both players.
Yeah. And the implications for either player is where the design really shines.
Right.
Because, you could make this type of game a game with symmetric pieces and mechanics, but asymmetric goals, and it could be a lot less interesting than this game is.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think part of that's because it's only a two-player game. Mm-hmm. You have two sides to worry about, and you can directly have this, like, tug-of-war between them. You know, there's fewer, like, variables to balance when there's two players that want different things that are strictly opposed.
Mm-hmm.
It
helps that both victory conditions are based on just moving pieces on a board.
Mm-hmm.
That's where, you know, part of the asymmetric goal starts to stem from is that they come from the exact same mechanic. It's not like the Jack wins off of one mechanic of something like the lighting, like just the lighting, and the other player wins on just the movement. It's like they both win from moving.
Yeah. I think what's really interesting about that, though, is that even then, both players want both types of lighting, either seen or unseen, at different points of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because the inspector, for the most part, just wants to know who Jack is, as long as there's not a big chance Jack will escape if they're unseen. And Jack wants to be in the majority, regardless of if they're seen or unseen, until they want to escape. So, like, for most of the game, the only, like, deciding factor is what the majority of characters are in as far as vision goes, which means that, like, It's not like whoever has the most visible characters or invisible wins, you know. If Jack only wanted to be invisible, then it would be in their best interest to just, like, make every character invisible. And if the inspector only wanted characters to be seen, it would be in their best interest to always go for this. But because both of them can be useful, there's, like, this tension of, you know, is keeping them visible for one turn safe or risky? Is it drawing out the game too long? Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That I think adds a nice little amount of tension.
Yeah, the visibility mechanic is a very, very deep and interesting mechanic. And the way that it plays with both of the win conditions.
Yeah.
There's a lot of complexity to it.
Right.
For being such a simple system, is just saying, you know, either this person is seen or they're unseen, and if they're seen, they can't escape.
Right, yeah. I really like how, so this game could end really early, just because, you know, Jack can escape on round two, or the inspector can accuse Jack super early, but because that gives away a lot of, because trying to escape gives away a ton of information, Jack wants to wait a few turns before trying to make that run to, like, set things up or start letting lights die out, which does give the inspector some time to, like, mess around with the characters and kind of feel out the opponent. It doesn't feel like you're wasting a session by somebody winning instantly, which is really nice. And on the same end, Jack can win by prolonging the game. But it at least we didn't run into any sessions where it reached the final round. Usually around round six or seven, it came to, like, a climax where both players had, you know, one turn to win.
I think our latest game went to round seven.
Yeah.
And the way that it ended was there were two characters that were constantly, one of them was Jack and one of them wasn't. They were on opposite sides of the board, and you were constantly keeping them both at the same status, whether that was visible or not visible.
Yeah.
So the only way that I ended up winning that game was actually just by luck, because I got Sherlock Holmes and I drew a witness, and that witness happened to be one of the two characters.
Sure. It feels like it doesn't go to time that much, though, which I think would be intentional. If I were to make, like, this type of game where it could run out of time, I would still want to design it so it, like 90% of the time ends before that timer. Because, like, if it ends with the timer, it might feel like the detective wasted their time. Like, oh, yeah, what was the point? It's a wild goose chase.
Yeah, it probably feels the most unfun when it goes to time.
Right.
Because you're just kind of stalling until...
Right, by
the game ends.
By, like, designing it so that it ends before the timer most often, it feels like the players did something. They had agency in the game. You know, they won because they made a big move.
Yeah, this is probably just a design lesson in saying, like, you know, you'd rather the game end on the player's terms than, you know, just by timing out.
Yeah, you do want... usually a timer in a game like this just to say, like, all right, that's enough. But you know, having this organic timer does help boost morale in a way, especially because two-player games go so quick, you kind of want them to be played in multiple sessions sometimes, at least like these gateway ones. You know, there can be complicated two-player games, but one as simple as this, you'd want it to be the type of game where players want to replay it again.
Right.
So you mentioned ethical card counting.
Yeah, this is a mechanic that I'm pretty interested in. I think there's a lot of cool things that you could do with it. This game is like a gateway version of that. And it's just the ability to predict what cards are about to be drawn.
Yeah.
In this game, the way that it works is that, you know, there's eight characters. You draw four of them one turn, and then the next turn you're guaranteed to draw the other four. So, I mean, in one way, this is just about thinking a turn ahead and understanding what's happening. This game adds, you know, all of the character abilities, and also the fact that Jack has to be invisible for one turn and then escape the next turn, that force you to use this knowledge in creative ways. Like, I think pretty much every time I was playing as Jack and I was about to win, I knew I was about to win the turn before because of this, you know, situation.
Yeah. It's a game where it has, like, this random shuffling and then dealing cards, but because there's only 8 cards, you can predict what's going to be next and use that to your advantage.
Right.
It's sort of like there's 2 separate hands being dealt, and then just you shuffle after the 2 hands have been played. Because there's still that random element after every pair of rounds.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I do like games that kind of encourage card counting like that. In this game, I don't think it deters, or it doesn't, like, hurt the game by having it still hidden, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it could be you just deal all 8 cards into 2 groups of 4 and then play 1 group of 4 first. But, I don't know. That might be, like, a quality of life type of thing. I don't think it necessarily, like, impacts the game negatively, though. I don't know.
No, I like it.
It's weird, yeah.
It's a very satisfying feeling when you can, when you make that decision, like, oh yeah, this person's going to be in the next batch. Or maybe even saying, like, oh yeah, these 2 people are going to be in the next batch. Jack is going to be forced to take that one, and I'll take the other. And everything will turn out to my advantage.
Yeah.
Getting those advantages by, you know, planning ahead is a very satisfying feeling. And in this kind of a game where it's very easy to plan ahead because you know exactly what's coming up, it makes you feel that feeling just that much more often and that much easier.
Right.
It's a similar feeling to playing competitive card games or deck builders, especially deck builders where you have very few cards in your deck to begin with. And you can start to predict what you're drawing.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely like a skill ceiling thing that does reward you for paying attention,
mm-hmm.
but doesn't necessarily penalize you for not paying attention. It just is slightly less optimal.
Right.
Yeah.
And in this game, the only way that I could see it penalizing you as the inspector is if you just don't realize that, you know, your main suspect is in the next one, and you know that Jack is going to be the first to go because Jack always takes the even number turns when the remaining 4 cards are drawn, and Jack is guaranteed to move, you know, the hidden character to an exit.
Right. Yeah. But,
I mean, that's just negligence, I guess.
I guess. Something I like is that in this game, the battle is, like, entirely based on knowledge or, like, inference. You know, it's a mental battle, really, as far as who's ahead and who's behind. But there's still this interesting visualization of the back and forth between Jack and the detectives, which is that as the rounds progress, they take turns picking the first card or the second card. And it gives us, like I said, this physical element and this visualization to the actual battle that otherwise is kind of not really apparent or visible. Mm-hmm. Because while you're moving characters around, like, since both players do the same things when they move them, it might not be easy to see who's, you know, like I said, who's on the offense, who's on the defense until very late game. It is weird in, like, a weird, like, thematic disconnect way that the detective can control Jack. This is just, you know, a byproduct of the hidden traitor mechanic being used here, or the hidden role. It does feel weird that the detective can choose to move the character that is Jack before Jack can move that character.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why would Jack intentionally sabotage himself? Which is always just kind of weird, but it's another thing where it doesn't hurt the game, and I don't know what I would have done to change it in any regard.
Yeah. It's also a little confusing that, like, I mean, yeah, it's confusing that one person is Jack, but by being Jack, that just means that you know who Jack is and you want to help them escape.
Yeah.
It's not like you are them. And being the inspector, like, there's really only 2 people, 2 characters that can actually make an arrest.
Yeah.
But anyone can make the arrest in this game, because for some reason everyone is helping you as the inspector, except the theming gets a little shaky there, but you know, that's not a big deal. It's a simple game. It's a gateway game.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Definitely. So,
theme can be a little looser in those cases.
I do like the game's use of whole even numbers. There's like a number theming going on here, if that makes sense. So like there's 8 characters, 8 rounds. There are 8 manholes, 8 gas lamps. 6 mm-hmm. manholes start open, 6 gas lamps start lit. There are the 4 barricades. You know, it looks like the longest stretches. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, the longest stretches of road are 8 tiles long. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It has like an arc number, to use a TV trope. Like a number that is apparent in the game. There's 4 there's 4 visible, 4 invisible at the start of the game. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's kind of fun. I like using numbers multiple times in games just because it can be aesthetically pleasing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at least for the number of characters, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it takes, you know, it takes at least 3 turns to whittle down to... if you're somehow only doing half of the characters every turn,
right?
You know, 3 turns to whittle it down to 1. But even after 2 turns, you don't know exactly who it is. It still leaves 2 people that could possibly be Jack the Ripper.
Exactly. It's a number that can be divided by 2 all the way to 1. You know, it's a power of 2.
So this is Spooky Games Month. Is there anything in this game that kind of evokes a little bit of sense of tension?
Or I think there's like
spookiness?
A paranoia over who's Jack that
yeah.
can come into play that Jack, the player, wants to sort of induce. When like multiple characters are in the same state as Jack and multiple characters are sort of gunning for positions that could leave. You know, at some point as the detective, it kind of gets to the point where, like, you're kind of scanning all the exits. Like, okay, who can reach any exit in mm-hmm. any amount of time?
You right. know? When you're starting to get towards the end of the turn tracker as a detective, you also kind of start to think, like...
Oh, God, my time is up.
Like, should I just make a wild guess?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to make a wild guess till the end of the game, till the 8th turn, unless things are getting away from you and you're... You might miss an opportunity to, you know, move one character next to another or on top of another to make that arrest.
Exactly. It's also true that, like, because Jack needs to be unseen to escape, the character that is Jack is less likely to be in a group with other characters, which creates this visualization of, like, a group of people huddling together to avoid a killer and then the killer just being in a dark alleyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a neat visual to match this that comes across as part of the mechanics.
Speaking of visuals, there's a thing that there's an issue I have with this game.
Uh-oh.
Graphically. And that's just that the manhole covers and the street lamp tokens are oriented in such a way that the vertical, you know, line of that, you know, arrangement. You know, the 90 degrees to the horizon for that illustration lines up with 2 of the corners of the hex. But for on the board, the artwork for the things that they're covering up, the artwork, the horizon lines up with the corners of the hex. So what I'm saying is that every piece of artwork for a token that covers up an entire hex is like rotated, you know, 1/6 of a full spin.
Oh yeah, that's weird.
What is that, 60 degrees?
Yeah,
every piece of artwork is rotated 60 degrees on the thing that it covers up.
Yeah, that's
weird. Which and I guess you can make the argument that helps it stand out, but it bothers me.
Yeah,
I just want to reach in there and turn it back just 60 degrees to the left, or not, maybe not, it's not 60, it's 1/12 of a full rotation that it's been moved.
So 30?
30 degrees.
Okay. But other than that, it's a good game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have much else to say about it.
Yeah, other than that, other than the weird quirk about the hexes, it's a good game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to say about it, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a decent two-player. It's actually a really good two-player game. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot of strategic depth that we didn't scratch the surface of because we only played it a handful of times.
Yeah.
We played it, I don't know, like, what did we do, six games of it?
I think so.
Yeah. But there's certainly probably a lot more, especially, you know, openings, depending on, like, which characters get drawn in the first four that either player would be interested in doing. Like, one of your moves was to pick John Smith as the investigator and take one of the central lamps and put it on the edge of the board and then cluster a couple of those darkened people around it. Or maybe that was your move as Jack, because you were trying to keep everybody lit.
Maybe,
so you would,
yeah,
like, cluster a bunch of people on the edge of the board and move a lamp over there, right, on, like, the first turn. And that would keep everybody witnessed.
Yeah.
There would only be, like, two unwitnessed people. And, of course, Jack would be witnessed after that action.
Yeah.
So there's, yeah, I think there's a lot of potential for strategic depth, a lot of replayability. Definitely a lot of replayability for this game. And, yeah, I'd call it a good, decent gateway game when it comes to, like, hidden abilities.
Asymmetric goals.
Asymmetric goals. Bluffing and deduction. I mean, yeah, a two-player bluffing and deduction game. That's
pretty cool.
Not very common.
Yeah.
And this game does it well. All right.
All right.
So with that, that'll be the end of our episode on Mr. Jack. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
If you like, you can follow us on social media at BG Bros Cast. Hit us up with what you thought of the episode or your suggestions for other games that we haven't played yet or talked about yet on our podcast. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, to find all our episodes. They are tagged with all the games that we've played and discussed in them. So if you are looking for a specific episode on a specific game that you like, you can go through the tags, find it there. That'll take you straight to the episode. If you don't see it, that means we haven't discussed it yet. So again, hit us up with that suggestion on social media. On our website, you can find a link to our TeePublic store. That's teepublic.com/user/BGBcast. You can go there to get merch with our cool logo on it. And that does it for BG Bros Plugs. So let's hear it from Matt Plugs.
I write articles under the episodes and articles tab of our website. My most recent article was about the game Untitled Goose Game, just like a review of it, talking a bit about its genre and its design. You can find that under the Matt column tag as well on our website. I also stream at twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/twak. I'm going to be moving my stream back to about 12 p.m. or 1 p.m. Central U.S. time or so. I stream a lot of platformers, roguelites, Metroidvania type of games, fighting games, competitive games. I started speedrunning a new game, the new ukulele game, so that's pretty fun. You can follow me on Twitter at MattCraigGaming to get announcements when I go live. Through that Twitch page, you can also find a Discord server where I also post when I go live, and you can talk to us and other fans of the stuff I do, and also get updates on when I post articles. And also, I do want to announce that at the end of this year, I'm going to be posting an article on, like, updates to strategy notes of games that we've covered in episodes. So if you have, like, a point of strategy that you want to tell us or recommend to us or, you know, discuss, then feel free to message us on the Board Game Bros pages or, you know, tweet at us or post on the Board Game Geek page for our podcast or stuff like that, because I check that. I'd love to hear any sort of strategy updates that other people have for games we cover, because, you know, we're only two people who can only play so many games.
Mm-hmm.
But we love learning board games better. So,
yes.
Yeah. That does All it right. for me.
And with that, again, hit us up with those strategy comments on social media or wherever you'd like. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week to discuss another spooky game.
Ooh.